supported during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week we'll be joined by newly elected AFGE 14th District National Vice President Eric Bunn and AFGE General Counsel David Bohr. We'll also learn about sequestration's impact on border security with National Border Patrol Counsel Vice President Sean Moran. But first, we've been joined by AFGE Defense Conference Chair Don Hale. Don, great to have you back on the program.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Don, the news about sequestration in DOD has improved, but not by much. What's your reaction to the Pentagon's decision to reduce its number of furlough days for civilian employees from 22 to 14?
Well, you know, having the furlough days reduced, obviously, is a good thing for our employees. It's a little less painful. The problem is still, is it really necessary? I personally believe that there are other things that could be done to achieve the savings that they're looking for, as opposed to just putting this heavy burden on the backs of DOD employees.
What are some of those other savings that you think the Pentagon could look at?
Well, you know, they haven't stopped any of their big contracts for future missile systems, any of those type of defense type of projects moving along like normal. As part of this sequestration, they were also supposed to look at some of their service contracts. In some cases, they have. I can't say that throughout DOD they haven't reduced the scope of some contracts, but not the majority of them, not even close. As a matter of fact, we're still finding that in a lot of cases, they're increasing the use of contractors and will continue to increase the use of contractors once we begin the furloughs. So this was just, it just is too much of a burden for DOD employees to bear. And I would say this to members of Congress, when they were having this discussion in January and kicked this down the curb, one of the things in the arguments in the debate was, we shouldn't tax. We shouldn't raise taxes. Well, if this isn't raising the taxes on DOD employees, I don't know what it is. It's a tax increase for us all, and a pretty drastic tax increase.
Don, you mentioned earlier that DOD hasn't really looked at its contracts for things like missile systems and whatnot. Do you think that some of those lines of defense are either not needed anymore or not as important as they used to be? Give us a sense for the importance of some of these contracts that haven't really been reevaluated.
Well, you know, it's a question of do you need it now? It really comes down to that. Is there stuff that can be pushed down the road until we have a better grip on our budgetary problems? And we've talked about this before just here at West Point. Is there a need to put up $1 billion barracks? $1 billion would pay for a lot of employees' furlough days. So it's stuff like that I don't think has been adequately looked at. You know, we're maintaining tanks that the Army has said they'll never use just because, you know, in a particular congressional district, the member of Congress don't want to give that work up. So I definitely think there are different ways to achieve the sequestered amount that they need to achieve without furloughing employees.
It sounds like you're saying to me here with some of these things that you detail with the contract for certain defense systems, service contracts, that some have been adjusted, but not really that many. It sounds like you're saying to me that there is an undue stress here being put on the backs of the federal employees.
Oh, well, there absolutely is. There absolutely is. And the lack of a definite decision is really troublesome. And it's really hampering the morale of our employees. And I hear this throughout all of DOD. The morale is at an all-time low. This kicking this furlough down the road instead of spreading it out over a longer period of time is just another example of the department not really caring what they're doing to civilian employees. There was absolutely no reason to push this thing down the road. If they were going to reduce the amount of furlough days, instead of 16 hours of pay period, maybe we could have gone to 10 hours of pay period. Something to relieve a little bit of the stress that's being put on these employees.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Don Hale, AFGE's Defense Conference Chair. Don, whether it's one day or 22 days, furloughs put federal employees under tremendous stress. Talk about the impact that these pay cuts, or as you mentioned earlier, tax on the federal employees will have on these middle-class DOD workers.
Well, people are scrambling to try to figure out how they're going to make ends meet. It's this myth out there about all of us employees getting paid exuberant amount of money for our salaries is a fallacy. It's a myth. That's not the case. We have many workers that, you know, don't know how they're going to pay a mortgage or the rent or make a car payment. And when we had first started negotiating these furloughs, you know, we had a date that people were looking at where, you know, they could go out and try to get a part-time job just to help them out until October. Well, now that's not even possible because we don't have a firm date that employees could even go to a potential employer and say, hey, listen, I could start work on this day. So it's there's a lot of angst out there. There's a lot of angst. People not knowing what they're going to do. It's will be leading up to the holidays. People are anxious about not knowing what's going to happen after this year because sequestration is the gift that keeps on giving. This is the first year. We have another 9 years if Congress doesn't get rid of the sequester. So this is just beginning, and it really has employees on edge.
Don, now while the number of furlough days has been reduced, the time frame has also been condensed as well. So the pay cut essentially remains the same, doesn't it?
It remains absolutely the same. That's why kicking this thing down the road made absolutely no sense. If we would have started this process 2 weeks ago like we were supposed to have, and the department then said, well, we don't need to furlough you for 22 days. We're going to reduce it to 14 and still spread it out between now and October, then it would have been a little bit easier for folks to handle. We wouldn't like it any more than we like it now, but at least it would have, you know, given some people a better chance of just meeting their everyday needs.
Don, you said that a lot of people are scrambling to figure out what to do next. There's a lot of anxiety amongst the workforce. What are your members in AFGE's Defense Conference saying now about this?
Well, again, it's there's still a lot of questions out there about how this is going to happen. People still don't know what days they're getting furloughed on. This thing changes every day, and I think it's the lack of concrete information that just have people going stir crazy. They want to know what's going on with their lives. They want to know if they have a child that's getting ready to go off to college, how much money would they be able to put towards that college bill? It's the everyday living expense cycle that's really got everybody just wound up.
Do you get the sense that some of your members feel empowered now to stand up and take care of business on their own behalf by calling their members of Congress or reaching out to people who might be able to help them?
You know, I do. And we have a couple things planned coming up in the next few weeks that I hope will really energize our grassroots activists because the only way that we could get helped out of this is through congressional action. We've been successful in moving members of Congress in the past. We have a good grassroots base. So this fight's not over by any stretch of the imagination. We're not going to go away laying down.
And I think one could look very closely at something like NSPS to see what the potential is for union members at AFGE, certainly within the Defense Conference, right?
Absolutely. Again, our activists did a great job during NSPS. Eventually, we got it overturned. You know, we had a day of informational picket a week or so ago. That was successful. We plan on doing some more of those, and just, you know, showing our communities what effect this is going to have, not only on us as employees, but it has a trickle-down effect. You know, if you're not at work, you're not going out to get lunch, you're not going to get coffee. And when you are at work and your pay's been reduced 20%, then that has a trickle-down effect on our communities. I was talking to an assemblywoman near West Point. She was at our informational picket. And she's very concerned about the revenue that will be lost during the furloughs and beyond because, you know, we have a lot of employees that will end up getting themselves into a financial hole and will have to dig themselves out. That's just the reality of it. When you have, you know, lower-graded employees living paycheck to paycheck, when you take 20% away, it's going to hurt them for a long time. It's going to hurt surrounding communities of our DOD installations for a long time.
Don, as we close out here, what's the impact on all of this on public service delivery?
Well, that's the unknown. Until we've actually gone through the furloughs, we really don't know the full effect of that. I believe it's going to be substantial. You just can't maintain the type of support that civilian employees provide the Department of Defense at 20% reduction. It just, something has to give, whether it's less security at our installations, whether it's doing things faster and not better because you need to meet time frames, and the sheer lesser productivity that is going to be achieved by our employees. You can only do so much in an 8-hour day, and you can only do less in a 32-hour week.
Don Hale, AFGE's Defense Conference Chair. Don, always fun to have you on the program. Good luck going forward dealing with this situation.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next we'll be joined by newly elected AFGE 14th District National Vice President Eric Bunn.
Attention AFGE members. Are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit that allows you to buy brand-name electronics, furniture, and more through easy payroll allotment. With no upfront cash or credit check required and 12 months to pay, Purchasing Power gives you a better way to buy. AFGE members receive an 8% discount over what other federal employees pay. Learn more at afge.org/purchasingpower.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Eric Bunn, AFGE's 14th District National Vice President. NVP Bunn, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
So you are, of course, the newly elected National Vice President in AFGE's 14th District. Talk to me about your top priorities now as NVP.
Well, my top priority, clearly listening to the membership, is to, one, provide better service to our members and representation, organizing in areas that we are supposed to be handling for our AFGE. Also, I'm looking at how we can streamline our representation process to disconnect between the membership or the locals and the District 14 in the best way to address the areas that we need to represent. And using things like technology helped us to, you know, streamline the process so we can get through these cases as fast as possible. Another issue that I'm really key on is enhancing our training programs to make our locals more self-sufficient, make sure they understand their responsibilities to far as representing our members and making sure they have the tools necessary to be successful. A major issue that we're dealing with is being aggressive on our organizing of unrepresented areas, trying to increase our membership. We have a lot of issues that we can organize around, specifically the sequestration issue, and making sure that these members within the bargaining units are represented. My main goal is making sure that 14th District is inclusive and all the things that that this district will be doing, making sure I get comments and feedback from our leaders on the best way we can serve them.
As you look at the sequestration issue, MVP Bunn, how has that impacted your members in District 14?
Well, sequestration, as from the national on down, it's just a crazy issue of how Congress is trying to balance this budget on the backs of our workers. It has impacted our members. I mean, some of our members receiving possibly 20% reduction in pay between now and October 1 is a devastating impact on their quality of life. The questions and concerns we're having is how these agencies are trying to implement this sequestration, going along with the national and providing guidance to our locals on ways to get in here and to negotiate sequestration, to lessen impact to our members, days that they can pick or not impacting their alternate work schedules. And so we've been successful in some agencies where we've reduced the number of days that are allocated or at least suggested from Congress. So we're working with our locals, but it does have a devastating impact. And if this thing is not straightened out by Congress, this thing starts again October 1, what more deficit we have to deal with.
You mentioned earlier that sequestration is an area where you could organize members around. How important is it to have a robust and active membership to go ahead and take some of these battles like sequestration head on?
Well, it's very important. I mean, our objective and goal here is, one, to put a face to what we do so the public will understand the potential impact of these budget cuts that are being spread across the entire federal government. So, and second piece here, we need to get the community more involved, to also take on our issue as we take on theirs, because it also impacts local governments throughout the nation, okay, reducing their subsidies they're receiving from the federal government. So, I mean, for them to my objective is to educate them on them along with the national office, to get them more active in our protests, our concerns, our calling Congress, addressing these things and how this impact is being implemented on them. And that's what I'm saying, the issue that I believe we can organize around to get more people inclusive to what's actually going on from big government.
And as it relates to representation, MVP Bunn, talk to me about how important a good, solid representation program is in the union's tool belt, if you will.
Well, that's what the whole thing the union's about is about representation. I mean, you know, that's what we started off from the beginning, to make sure that members' voices are heard, that we're representing them on the issues that impact them. So having a strong representational program and the very areas of, you know, representation regarding issues that are impacting them or negotiations, it is the key to what we do, okay? So that's one thing that we in the 14th District have to improve on, is how we represent our members. How the District 14 does this piece, how the locals does this piece, and how District 14 supports the local to make sure the objectives and goals are going forward. It's all about representation in various forms that we have to improve in.
And like you said earlier, using or improving technology to streamline that representation process is key. How else would you implement some new technologies into District 14?
Well, I look at what our locals, as being a local president, as being a council president, and how we deal with our membership. I mean, this new technology, the social media, or the ability to get on here and discuss issues online compared to face-to-face, we have to use that type of technology. We have to streamline our processes to the point that, you know, there's nothing new out here that we do, okay? The issues have been around for years. It's just what agencies is trying to take what issue and how they're trying to implement it. So we don't have to recreate the wheel. We already have examples. We've already had winning cases. We already got winning languages that has assisted us in arbitration in those areas. So make that kind of information available to our local leaders that they can, you know, pull down, look at examples, talk to our other locals who have experienced these negotiations or issues, making this a resource, of an information resource, to better equip them to be able to do their job.
MVP Bunn, given that this is just your third week on the job, it may feel kind of new, but you have an aggressive agenda here. What are some things that you've been able to achieve so far?
Well, one thing, as my number one thing is the service that the 14th District provides to the locals. And the concern regarding our response time back to inquiries or issues dealing with our locals, this 14th District will respond to emails, will respond to calls within 24 hours, log in your complaint, making sure we get your issue down and give you a response back to what your needs are. And secondly, as an aggressiveness on organizing, we have two metros scheduled this year, one starting next week. We'll be out there at the various locals into unorganized units, into organized units, to organize these members around issues that are impacting them at their particular agencies, and to be a presence in showing that we're there to address those issues. In reference to streamlining the representation areas, I've already met with GCO regarding trying out a new pilot program with them to how to ensure that they accept more cases that are being referred to them. Additionally, reviewing the district's protocol and giving out guidelines to the locals on the type of cases that we accept, the documentation that we need, and the area to make sure that we can get through this process a little bit more efficient than we have been doing in the past.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Eric Bunn, AFGE's 14th District National Vice President. NVP Bunn, the D.C. budget is always a hot topic. What's the latest with that?
Well, the D.C. budget is always a hot topic, as you said. Fortunately, the district has a surplus going into that we cut out of 2013. Today, I know the mayor is presenting his budget briefing to labor regarding his 2014 budget objectives and goals. I will be in that meeting today to see those things. I know one thing is in the budget that impacts our district government locals is a part of this budget, 2013 and 14, is a 12% pay raise for our members over the next 4 years, along with our compensation agreement that we just got finished negotiating. There's a provision in this budget that deals with the budget autonomy. So until I see the entire budget as the mayor lays out his objectives and goals for going to 2014, I'll be better able to comment on them. But dealing with him and discussing some of the issues and concerns through partnership, those are the issues that I'm aware of that are in the budget.
I understand that you've been doing some work with your DOD locals as well. Can you give us some insight on that?
Well, I didn't know I was walking into, but DOD is a mess that's, again, created by Congress, consolidating all these various military bases and transfer employees all around the world, really, basically. But it has an impact on our members here with Andrews and Fort Myers, Walter Reed Clothing. And this issue of reorganizing, moving our members into these joint areas of consolidation has had a serious impact. We are currently right now looking at where the consolidation of our bargaining units have been put together, looking at what areas that we represent, what areas that we can go after that need to be represented. We're reviewing job descriptions to determine who should be in the unit, who should not be in the unit. It has a great potential to increase our bargaining unit. But again, we have to get in there, making sure we organize these members. Coupled with sequestration, it's just a total mess. The only thing I'm asking the DDO members is to be patient while we work through these issues. We will be addressing the furlough issues as far as negotiations and working through the issues we have regarding the consolidation of these units into these joint bases.
NVP Bunn, earlier you mentioned, of course, the D.C. budget and the mayor's proposals coming forward. Have you had an opportunity to meet with Mayor Gray or any other city council members?
I met with Mayor Gray, but not to talk discuss issues since my election. I just was with him, I think it was Monday afternoon. I do plan to meet with the mayor regarding his budget and issues that I feel that the 14th district needs addressed to his point. Also, with the city council, I will be introducing, well, they all know me. I have a very good work relationship with them. But as my role is District 14, I plan to meet with the city council members to also discuss issues that are impacting our members.
So it sounds like then you'll be able to have access to some of those key decision makers as you're advocating on behalf of District 14 members.
Well, I've always had access to key decision makers as my local president being there for 20 years and also council president representing 4,500 members throughout the district government on numerous issues. I'm currently a member of the Citywide Labor Manager Partnership Council. I meet with the mayor and the city administrator on a quarterly basis on issues that impact labor. So I've been there. I continue to be there to address the issues that impact our members.
Eric Bunn, AFGE's 14th District National Vice President. NVP Bunn, great having you back on the program. Thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll discuss the union's latest legal wins with AFGE General Counsel David Bohr.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. To see how much you could save, call the AFGE Benefits Hotline at 1-888-844-2343 to get the members-only phone number from MetLife. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined again by David Bohr, AFGE's General Counsel. David, welcome back.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me.
David, the General Counsel's office at AFGE does a great job of providing legal representation to the membership. Today, we're going to look at some of those cases. But before we do, can you take us through the process of representing a federal employee?
Sure. Actually, the process doesn't start here. It kind of winds up here in the General Counsel's office. It starts out there locally most often. When something happens and a member out in one of the agencies has a problem and they go to their local union, they file a grievance. If you get terminated or suspended or you have some other contractual problem perhaps, or maybe an EEO claim, that stuff all starts at the local level. And once it's processed through the sort of preliminary steps that are available, it can be, in most cases, appealed to arbitration or to the EEOC, and sometimes to the Merit Systems Protections Board. So when it rises to that level, the local, through their district office, can submit a request to the General Counsel's office seeking representation, and then we review those cases as they come in, and we try to take every case we can that's not barred by statute or case law or agency rule, and we provide an attorney with representation free of charge to the employee.
It sounds like a tremendous undertaking, especially when you're talking about employees, as you mentioned, who may be suspended or terminated.
Right. And, you know, it happens all too often, quite frankly, and these cases aren't easy. One of the cases we've done recently, the hearing, which is basically a mini trial in front of an arbitrator. An arbitrator is just an independent third party that, as their profession, they go around and decide these kind of labor disputes. But this one recent case we had, that hearing took 6 days, and so it's basically a quite lengthy trial process. We get a lot of them done in less than that, but in a complicated case, it can be a lot of work.
And let's talk about some of these cases. I'm looking at one here handled by your office where a pediatric nurse at Offutt Air Force Base was fired in 2011, but has since been reinstated. Talk to me about the particulars of that case and the work that went into settling it.
Sure. We're very proud of that case, and that's the one I just referred to where it went through 6 days of trial in front of an arbitrator. And it was a pretty egregious case on the facts. The nurse had been involved in the union since 1996 when she led the successful organizing drive that brought AFGE onto the base. And then as she became a union activist, filed lots of grievances and unfair labor practices and was just doing what union leaders are expected to do, representing her members' interests. And she was even included in a large DOD-wide labor management conference where they were talking about replacing the national security personnel system. Well, at that point, apparently someone in management targeted her, and she went from being rated as a top performer to suddenly being knocked down in her performance ratings, and ultimately they refused to allow her to attend additional labor management meetings, and finally they fired her. The arbitrator said it best. The arbitrator said, and I'm quoting here, primarily motivated by hostility to her protected activities in describing management's actions. So that case, again, it took 6 days of hearings, but she was ultimately reinstated with full back pay and made whole for her losses. So it's a big victory, and I think it sends a signal that, you know, we take these matters seriously. Employees have rights, and union representatives have rights, and when their rights are violated, we go to bat for that.
Targeting an employee because of union activity seems pretty drastic. Are you surprised by this, or does this happen frequently where employees are faced with this sort of situation in the workplace?
It's all too frequent. Like I said before, it doesn't happen every day, but you get in a situation where, and frankly, the government, I spent a lot of years in the private sector. The government is actually better about this than the private sector, where it can be very aggressively anti-union. The government, as a general rule, isn't anti-union, but what you end up with is individual supervisors or managers or even heads of departments or even in some cases some whole agencies, where you get somebody that has an anti-union attitude, and they look for ways to undermine the union or to disarm essentially the union leaders because they don't like getting grievances, or they don't like getting unfair labor practices. They don't like having someone looking over their shoulder and demanding accountability. And so, yeah, it happens all too often, a little less in the government side than in the private sector, but still far too much.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with David Bohr, AFGE's General Counsel. David, another case that caught my eye focuses on the Bureau of Prisons, where a correctional officer was passed over for a promotion after being erroneously named as the subject of an inmate's complaint. What happened here?
Yeah, this is like a comedy of errors almost, except that it's serious because the employee had to go without a pay raise he was entitled to until we got this straightened out. Now, first, I want to give credit to Local 922 of AFGE. They handled this case themselves. Didn't come through our office, but we see these cases from time to time. This employee had put in for a promotion, but had it turned down because he was subject to an open investigation. Well, he looked into that, and it was based on charges that were 18 months old, and the charges actually involved a different correctional officer whose last name was similar. This is sort of your worst nightmare as an employee. You got a name next to you got a name that's similar to some guy that gets in trouble, and all of a sudden it splashes on you somehow. So it wasn't even this officer's fault. With some other officer, and to add to the irony, that other officer had actually gotten promoted because apparently the whole investigation thing was just in the wrong file. They put it in our guy's file and not the other guy. Well, long story, the local goes to bat for it, files a grievance, takes it to arbitration, and because of the mix-up, we were able to show that the officer was entitled to the promotion, and the arbitrator agreed. And our officer won back pay and all the benefits he would have received if he had been promoted on time initially. So 18 months or so worth of back pay.
18 months, David, seems like a long time. Why, after learning of the error, didn't the Bureau simply fix the problem?
You'd have to have somebody on from the Bureau to answer that question. And all joking aside, you know, we do try to talk to these agencies through their lawyers and say, look, here are the facts of this case. this is a gross miscarriage of justice. Everybody can see what happened here. I don't know what the conversation was in this particular case, but our lawyers do know that it's better to settle a case sooner rather than go through all the trouble at a trial and end up with the same result later. So I'm sure there were conversations there, but it's anybody's guess why the Bureau wouldn't agree to fix it. They had to wait for an arbitrator to tell them to fix it, I guess.
David, moving on to another agency, in the VA, we saw an instance where, once again, Title 38 employees were not treated the same as other employees, this time with regards to performance awards. How did AFGE right this wrong?
Yeah, this is a case that our attorney, Michael Pazder, out in California, handled. As you described it, it's a Title 38 employee, a group of employees, 35 of them, who were denied performance awards strictly on the basis of the fact they were Title 38 employees. Their coworkers in the same facility who were Title 5 and hybrid employees received these awards, but the facility denied the awards to these Title 38 employees. And that case went to arbitration, and the arbitrator ruled that, no, you can't just single out Title 38 employees and treat them differently just because they're Title 38. And as a result, these 35 employees will receive up to $1,000 apiece that they should have gotten back in 2011. So that was a nice win for that group of folks.
So just looking at a few of these cases here, we've seen where situations happen in the workplace where employees need and deserve some sort of representation. Talk to me a little bit about how you feel maybe this is an example of the union being needed now more than ever in some of these cases.
Well, it really is. And you know, whenever the talk turns to the union nowadays, people are apt to say things to you like, well, the union only represents bad employees, or I don't need a union because I don't, you know, violate the rules or things like that. Well, tell that to that correctional officer who missed out on a promotion for a long time because somebody else whose name just sounded like his had an investigation in his file. You know, there are a lot of stereotypes out there that, about what the union is or what the union does. In reality, you know, a lot of the cases we handle are just run-of-the-mill employees where the system didn't treat them properly for one reason or another, and something as ridiculous as the guy's name was like the other guy's name ends up having a negative impact. So we're here to straighten that stuff out. It's a big bureaucracy, you know, and an individual employee trying to go to bat for some of this stuff really isn't able to do that. And AFGE has, you know, a whole department full of attorneys who are highly skilled and handle these cases all the time and get real money, real results for our members.
And it sounds like you really need to be on top of your game. I mean, just here in our discussion, we looked at three different agencies with three unique cases.
Yeah, that's certainly a challenge for the lawyers. I know we have a lot of very experienced lawyers. We've hired more lawyers recently. I've actually been with AFGE less than 3 years myself, and I have to say, with the federal government, and I'm not telling your listeners anything, it's highly regulated, highly, you know, rule-driven, and there are rules and procedures for everything. And so, you know, it's like trying to figure out the tax code to know what your rights are. You know, it's a difficult thing for an individual employee. But that's, you know, that's what the union's for. We have a staff, and our lawyers are experts in this stuff. And again, our representation is free, so why not avail yourself of this protection and this assistance?
David Bohr, AFGE's General Counsel. David, thank you for coming on the program today and shedding some light on this important issue.
Thank you, Jason.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll learn about sequestration's impact on border security with AFGE National Border Patrol Council Vice President Sean Moran.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program. It offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program is administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office. It's handled more than 700 cases since 2005 and won millions of dollars in back pay for its members. In each of the last 2 years alone, AFGE attorneys have brought in more than $1 million in attorney's fees. Their attorneys are experienced litigators and committed to the best possible representation. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit Systems Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For more information about the program, please call 202-639-6424. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Sean Moran, the Vice President of AFGE's National Border Patrol Council. Sean, welcome to the program.
Good to be on. Thanks for having me.
Sean, sequestration has taken effect, and it appears that Border Patrol agents are being hit particularly hard with a pay cut of about 40%. Talk to me about this situation.
Yeah, it's a pretty difficult situation for agents to absorb, one, because of the financial impact, and then two, because of the impact it's going to have on our operations. Between the furlough days and what's known as administratively uncontrollable overtime, and leave it to the government to call something overtime when it's actually straight pay. But our agents, those two things combined, we're looking at 40% loss of pay.
What does that mean for not only the Border Patrol agents in their financial lives, but then the trickle-down effect to border security?
Well, the AUO is the 9th and 10th hour that Border Patrol agents work. They've done it since we can prove that they've done it back to the 60s, and we've heard anecdotally from retired agents that they've done it well past that. And what it is it allows the oncoming shift to overlap with the offgoing shift and maintain a presence out on the border, and it also allows us, if we're tracking a group of illegal aliens or we're in a pursuit, to be able to continue that and to maintain a secure border. Sometimes it's more than just 2 hours. An agent may work an additional 8 hours under AUO, and they're being paid straight time. It's the more important thing is that the border security is maintained, and under this the problem of sequestration, that is just going to be slashed. Agents are going to be forced to work 8-hour shifts, and that's going to leave gaps in coverage, and border security will be definitely impacted.
And something that our national president, J. David Cox, mentioned earlier in the program, Sean, is that border security is not an 8-hour-a-day job. This is something that requires 24 hours a day, 365 days a year of watchful eyes, correct?
That's true. The criminals are always on standby, waiting to go. They're waiting to expose a weakness or any type of lapse in coverage. They have all day to wait and watch and react to how we're doing our operations. And they're very good at it. They have ways of getting people or drugs across the border. They're willing to sacrifice a group of 50 illegal aliens that they know will be caught in order to get one or two people across the border. So it definitely is a huge item, and border security will definitely be impacted by this. And it's a really scary thought, because the Secretary, Janet Napolitano, has said the border is safer than it has ever been. And while that might be factually true, the border is by no means secure.
You mentioned that criminals are able to expose weaknesses. Are you seeing any evidence of that taking place now?
Yes, we are. We're seeing increased drug trafficking and trafficking of illegal aliens from Imperial Beach, California, which is the model station for the Border Patrol in terms of deterrence and Operation Gatekeeper, out into Tucson sector. The entire sector is still very busy, and the Rio Grande Valley sector over the past year has definitely increased, and in the past few weeks, since the word of sequestration and staffing cuts has started to get out, agents have reported that illegal aliens that are being caught are saying that they were under the assumption that they were going to be let out of jail or that there weren't enough Border Patrol agents to patrol the border, and that's why they came across. So when it actually, when the staffing cuts actually do take place starting on April 7th, we could be in for a wild ride.
So then those who may be trying to bring drugs or other illegal substances into the United States, they're aware of these situations taking place?
Like I said, these criminal organizations are highly complex. They are very smart. They have, you know, been working in these areas, in some cases, their entire lives. You know, some of these people are recruited from very low-income, poverty-level areas of Mexico, and they've been involved in smuggling or being a foot guide since the time that they could walk, and they know very well our capabilities. And when they see a drop in manpower or a drop in response times, they are poised to take action and take advantage of that.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Sean Moran, Vice President of AFGE's National Border Patrol Council. Sean, with the passage of the continuing resolution in Congress recently, we saw some agencies, I'm thinking particularly BOP, was able to move some money around to avert any furloughs throughout the system. Did your agency see any kind of relief with the passage of the continuing resolution?
Well, there's been talk that we may not see furlough days, but we're looking at that as kind of a shell game to distract the public. They're going to say, you know, CBP and Border Patrol will say that no Border Patrol agents are being furloughed, but then they won't mention that there will be staffing cuts due to the loss of AUO. This is just political cover for the agency. They have wanted to get rid of AUO for at least 6 years. There's been talk for far longer than that, but this gave them a convenient excuse because under the CR, they were given enough money to cover salary and expenses, but they have said from the beginning that the only place they can legally make these cuts are under salary. Meanwhile, they have funds, one of them called Best Fit, and to be honest, I'm not really sure what this fund does. I've been told it's job retraining for, you know, intra-agency jobs, but I know that this fund has almost $500 million in there, and it's not being used. And Congress chastised the agency for it, the way it made its cuts, for its spending and accounting practices, but yet when the CR is passed and they're given enough money to maintain staffing, they go ahead and they cut it anyway.
So your big concern here is with the AUO. What are your colleagues saying about this situation?
This is a deal breaker for a lot of people. I've had agents tell me that they're going to lose their house because they won't be able to pay their mortgage, especially in Southern California. I've had agents who have said that their wife has already threatened to throw them out of the house because they're not going to be bringing in. They'll be bringing in a little over half of what they did previously. And it's just going to have a devastating impact on family lives, on financial security. It's going to have a huge impact on retirement. Many agents have told me that they have applications in elsewhere or they have job offers from other agencies, some even state and local. And we've advised them that if they have that and that is a better life for them, that they should go ahead and do that. Some agents have said they're going to go back to their previous law enforcement jobs because even though they didn't make as much money, they're going to make more money now because of the cut to AUO and possible furlough days.
Sean, give me a sense for what it's like to be a Border Patrol agent.
Being a Border Patrol agent is a very difficult job. You go in at the beginning of your shift. You have a muster with the other people that you're going to be working with that day. And you get prepared for what you're about to face. And sometimes it could be hours and hours of boredom waiting for something to happen. But our strategy is deterrence-based. You have to be there. And when you hear a sensor go off or another agent spots a group or a helicopter spots a group of illegal aliens or smugglers or you don't even know what it is sometimes, you have to go check it out. And it can be very dangerous. The terrain is very rough in some areas. The weather can play a factor. You know, you still have to get out there whether it's a downpour or it's 110 degrees or it's 10 degrees below zero. you have to get out there and find out what crossed the border, and you never know what you're going to be up against. And agents have come to accept the danger. We've lost 119 agents in the line of duty, my brothers and sisters in green that have given their lives for this country because they believed in the mission. And, you know, this kind of spits on their grave, as it were, because we're giving up on the mission. We're cutting the staffing and basically throwing the border open. And it's just something that does not sit well with agents. And like I said, they've learned to accept the danger of the job, but they don't expect to be knifed in the back by the agency.
So what then can you do as a representative of AFGE's National Border Patrol Council to push back against some of these efforts against you and your colleagues?
Well, we are looking at our different bargaining possibilities and possibilities for litigation. I won't get into too much detail about that, but we are urging the public and urging our members day after day to get in touch with their congressional officials because Congress is not happy with the agency, and neither should the public. So we urge them, if you want border security and you want agents to be out there at the full staffing levels, call your congressional officials and just urge them repeatedly to make sure that the agency does the right thing.
Sean, what kind of support are you getting from the public, from your neighbors and your communities, the people who know that you all go out there and secure the nation's border regardless of weather conditions, regardless of the danger involved, regardless of the terrain that you have to navigate on a day-to-day basis? What kind of support are they lending to you all?
You know, Jason, since Homeland Security was formed, we've had some great support from the public. Our profile has definitely gone up. Most people didn't know that we even had a Border Patrol prior to 9/11 and prior to the creation of Homeland Security. So people have realized the danger that does exist on the borders, and they want it stopped. They want to be protected. So we've had a great groundswell over the past decade of people supporting our agents. We see it all the time on our Facebook page and our Twitter account. People are able to, contact us directly. And both of those are at BP Union. It's facebook.com/BP Union. And on Twitter, the handle is BP Union. All the time we get messages of support, not only from our members, but from the general public, saying thank you to all the agents that are out there working the line and protecting my family.
Sean, as we close out here today, what are your final thoughts on this situation?
This is a situation that needs to be stopped. For far too long, we've just let border security be a house of cards that was built on a foundation of lies. And it's time to stop playing games when it comes to border security. We've been a political football for both sides. Nobody really wants to take border security seriously. We want to, make it look like we're being serious without actually doing anything concrete. So it's time that the public is aware of the games that are being played, and it's time to tell Congress to stop it, and especially the spineless leaders that lead CBP and the Border Patrol. They need to be thrown out, and we need to get somebody in there that's willing to do the job correctly.
Sean Moran, Vice President of AFGE's National Border Patrol Council. Sean, we appreciate your time here today and also the work that you do in keeping this country safe and secure.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you to our guest this week, AFGE Defense Conference Chair Don Hale, 14th District National Vice President Eric Bunn, General Counsel David Bohr, and National Border Patrol Council Vice President Sean Moran. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. WFED Washington, www.